Welcome back, everyone. Really glad to have our guest from Definity, Pierre, who is a really dear friend and a colleague. And today I have to say we had one of the most fascinating discussions where we talked about, obviously, internet computer, Definity, amazing things they are doing actually in the field of decentralized infrastructure, where you can fully create a stack for your application to be decentralized at all levels. We also talked about the AI hype and the AI implementation and what Definity is doing in that space. Had a fascinating discussion about mining. What was Pierre's journey in UAE, but also in the consulting industry and the crypto industry, and one of the most amazing discussions ever. So hope you will enjoy this and have a blast and welcoming our guest.
Yes, I mean, it's been an amazing week. The start of the week has been totally crazy. And elections, 2024. I mean, let's start from this topic. What do you think, or maybe there has been an impact on the crypto space, but where do you see this going? And what do you think about the whole result?
Well, I mean, it was a very exciting day for the entire industry yesterday, yeah. Right? So you can see it in the market cap, right? New all-time high immediately, yeah. And election night, as soon as it was clear that Trump is going to win, there was a new all-time high. Obviously, he was the candidate that was most visibly pro-crypto all the time, right? I think the Democrats at one point in time realized that it might be favorable to also talk about crypto, mm-hmm. but I think they came a bit too late to the party and was not really genuine.
Yeah, even his meme token was not...
Well, I mean, that's really something. I don't know why he did this, honestly, right? I mean, and then I think that the website even didn't work or something when people wanted to sign up.
Yeah.
But I mean, keep that aside. I think I would expect this as a net positive mm-hmm. in the long term for the crypto industry, for sure, right? I mean, it's pro-Bitcoin. He made a lot of statements. I'm pretty sure he's going to keep his word on this, right? I think we'll hopefully see America become a center now for crypto rather than driving people out through regulation and through the SEC and so on. So my view, it's a net positive for us, I guess.
Yeah. May I ask a question slightly related to that? Because, you know, many times people say he will fire Gary Gensler, who is the chairman or chairperson of the SEC. Actually, I read about it. The president cannot do that, actually. Yes. So he cannot fire him. So that's, I think, very important
for us. I read the same thing today.
But I think, you know, many people say that, I mean, I think it's difficult to point a finger at one person, but they kind of said many times Gary Gensler or the SEC have been a huge blocker for the development of the crypto industry in US, but maybe even globally, like if you take a look. So. Yeah. We're in a crypto-friendly jurisdiction, I would like to think, UAE, and maybe this is something you can also share your experience because you've been longer here than us.
Yeah.
And so do you think, you know, we're going to have, or who do we will have next as the chairwoman of SEC? And how does UAE compare, or what does UAE bring from your experience into the crypto industry?
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know who's going to be the next SEC chair, but there was a rumor about that, the crypto lady, basically, being next in charge. Again, as you said, like the president can't fire the SEC chair, but he has probably enough pressure and a big enough stick in his hand to move.
Changes things, will happen. It's unavoidable.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is also positive because, I mean, I'm not into all of the details of what the SEC did, but I mean, it was clear that there were a couple of swing backs in opinions mm-hmm. left and right. And it drove a lot of people outside of the US, right? I mean, even here in the UAE, we had a lot of inflow of people mm-hmm. that were initially trying to set up in America, but then they said, no, it's not the right environment under the circumstances. So let's move somewhere where at least we have a kind of a stable regulation and we know what to deal with. Mm-hmm. This is where I think the UAE did a really good job since mm-hmm. 2016, mm-hmm. or actually even earlier, I think 2015, in kind of embracing this entire blockchain digital asset space. Mm-hmm.
You were a part of that very early on, if I can bring the discussion or open up the discussion, if you want to share, yeah?
Yeah, I'm in the UAE since 10 years now.
Wow.
Never regretted it, had many decision points where, you know, I could have gone back somewhere, back to Europe or into the US, and I already decided to stay here. The UAE has been always a remarkable place of embracing new tech on the government level, and then pushing it forward, or at least inviting everyone to come, right?
And shape. It's very collaborative, how you will say it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, indeed. And I recall, like in I think it was end of 2015 or beginning of 2016 when we had the Dubai blockchain strategy, right? So it was the first blockchain strategy of a government. That was obviously in kind of our, at least for me, that was the first big Bitcoin hype cycle. So yeah. I came into the space like end of 2014. That was kind of the first hype cycle. We had projects all over the UAE doing blockchain strategies and so on.
Consensus was big at the time.
Yes, I remember. They were in Design District.
They were here,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. They had a huge office in Design District.
They still have the huge office
They left. I think, I mean, Consensus did a very aggressive expansion strategy across many countries, right? And might have been a bit too aggressive, I think, for that time, right? Because, and that also, like, you could clearly see that in, when was it? February 17? Was it 17 or 18? February 17, I believe, was it? Oh, no, 18. When Bitcoin went from 20,000 to 5,000, right? The entire party stopped also in terms of projects, right? And I think this was probably the downfall of a lot of these consulting firms that were banking heavily on blockchain business now, right?
Yeah. Just to ask you, I mean, kind of what was your then, I mean, because you have a very unique background, I would say. You were a key person at Roland Berger for the region. And kind of what was your first, you know, touch point operation, like hands-on in the crypto industry? Yeah? Because you are now the key person at Definity, one of the world's biggest crypto projects. Mm-hmm. But maybe if you can kind of tell us like your journey, your story, I think that would be
very Sure. So, I mean, I initially started as a software engineer. Back in the early days, right?
So you studied computer science?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I actually coded, and I mean, in the early days of kind of the movement of web one to web two, like when web became dynamic with PHP and so on. So, but then I moved into basically corporate, into the corporate world, did an MBA on top, and then I moved into the energy industry because I was actually doing my MBA on with the thesis on comparing the internationalization strategies of two of the major European energy companies. That got me into energy. So fast forward, spent a good portion of my career in energy, then came to Dubai as part of the energy industry. So became the CEO of a joint venture.
When you're saying energy, I'm thinking about miners now. So I think there is a parallel there.
It's coming. It's coming. But it's, but funny enough, it wasn't the first touch point around mining.
Okay.
But it played a big role. So, so yeah, fast forward, I came here to Dubai with one of the largest German energy companies. They had a joint venture with DEWA, became the CEO of that joint venture. And we had two business lines at that point in time. One was classic consulting. So we externalized the management consulting services of RWE. So I've been involved in a lot of the energy strategies that were made at that time in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and so on. And the second part was a small venture fund. Because at that point in time, the European energy industry was really in a bit of an identity crisis. Because everyone thought our entire business model is going to be decentralized. No one is going to need central power anymore. Everyone can sell electricity with a retail license. So what's left for utilities? Right? And in that movement, we started to set up innovation hubs across the world in Silicon Valley, in Dubai, in Berlin, and so on. And we defined themes of, about what could be the future of energy. And one of the themes we had was the idea of a machine-to-machine economy, where basically you have a lot of devices in the distribution grid and they all need to communicate to each other and they all need to do payments, right? And micropayments were not feasible at that point in time. And there came blockchain, right? So blockchain was kind of the idea of enabling a machine-to-machine economy. Then obviously the entry gate late 2014 was Bitcoin. Then a year later, Ethereum, and then the journey started from there.
But can I ask you, like, the mining, I mean, was the mining analogy to the Bitcoin mining, to the crypto mining as well? Or do you have any experience there? Or to ask provocatively, are the MENA governments mining themselves, actually?
Yes. Yes, they are. And I'm super happy that I was a part of all of this to a certain extent, right? But I also remember, by the way, because I was in consulting, right? I also remember that we did a study in end of 2015 for a big utility company that had 52 gigawatts of power generation for entering the Bitcoin mining business with their excess capacity. The price was, I don't know, probably around $6,000 or something.
I was going to say eight.
somewhere around that territory, right? And even at that price,
and did they deploy after the study?
No, or? They rejected it.
Oh.
So they rejected it because the board members were just not comfortable in, you know, investing their power in this magic internet money, and right. So
and now this is it like a chase? Who's going to do it first?
Yeah, exactly. And one of my main projects at Roland Berger when I joined the guys here, and which actually led to us founding the digital asset and Web3 practice in RB. We've been working with the sovereign funds over here in the UAE, and one of the sovereign funds who owns most of the energy infrastructure basically had a simple question. The question was, what do we do with our excess energy capacity? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the answer to that was Bitcoin mining. So we helped them do the entire Bitcoin mining strategy and also the operationalization, bringing the joint venture partners and so on. And that was a really exciting project.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like also a very exciting project.
Yeah.
Mining is really, really big nowadays. Flashback to the AIM summit.
Yeah.
There were some very big miners there and they are all more open-minded. And I think mining is back. Especially now that Bitcoin has reached the 75,000 levels. So I believe that for many of these projects now, mining is either is profitable or is tending to become profitable.
Yeah.
But not all mining is profitable. This is what I hear. And Anton this week has told me that some of the foundations are also giving incentives when it comes to mining.
Mm-hmm. I think I can call it out. It's Solana, actually. Yeah? Solana subsidizes heavily through the foundation all because mining is completely uneconomical. Yeah.
So Solana is subsidizing Bitcoin mining?
No, Solana mining.
Ah, they own mining. Okay.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not uncommon, right, with protocols that you kind of subsidize your infrastructure ecosystem, right? But on the Bitcoin part, I mean, it's actually quite interesting, right? Because 80 to 90% of your OPEX mining is energy cost. Yeah. So on that side, it's a very easy calculation. If you have an energy price that is somewhere below $0.04 per kilowatt hour,
mm-hmm.
you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Current price levels probably push this up to $0.06 or $0.07 or so, but that's mainly it.
And what's the price in UAE or in MENA region on average? I mean, kind of like not where.
Well, it always depends, right? Because, I mean, I can't spoil the price because that was really like government negotiation.
I'm asking the right question.
But I can tell you something. So
the benchmark.
So in the MENA region, right? General, not only UAE, but in the MENA region, you should be able, if you have the right support, to secure a price of $0.03.
Mm. Right? But then again, you need to buy the land. You need to buy the miners. You need to get the people. You need to connect as well. There's a lot of infrastructure costs before you start aiming for this amount of these $0.03.
True, but it's also a very straightforward, relatively risk-free business model because the other interesting thing is that, I mean, miners, as you know, they run in sprints, not in marathons, right? Like every 10 minutes, a block is mined. And your average lifespan of the machines is 3 years max, right? So it's a very foreseeable risk that you're taking. You're deploying CapEx for 3 years, and then basically you have break even depending on where the price is after a year.
So you need to time this 3 years because if you get it in the wrong place in the market cycle, you get out of business.
True. That's why, I mean, you saw before the halving that the hash rate went through the roof, right?
Yes.
Because people were just deploying and deploying and deploying, obviously with the assumption that immediately after the halving, the price will skyrocket, which never happened in the history of Bitcoin. But I think the industry always falls back into the same trap, right? Because you usually see that 6 months after the halving, nothing happens really, right? There's a big, a small spike immediately around the halving. It's like a sell the news event kind of thing. But it takes a while until the market catches up.
May I open up maybe one question and then also move also discussion a little bit more towards Definity as well? Is that the way I see it, and I'm not an expert in mining, but mining has now competition in the context of generative AI, right? Because it's not the same infrastructure, it's not the same machines, but it's kind of like going in that direction. And also like the way I understand it, actually using infrastructure for generative AI is extremely expensive, right? It's all this cloud facilities. But there are also then alternatives towards that as well, I think in the crypto, on the blockchain industry. So maybe to open up the question, if you have more insights around I think maybe you do.
So yeah, I mean, that's a super valid observation, right? This is also why you see a lot of the mining companies, whether it's Hut 8 or even in our region, not pivoting, but adding AI as another layer on top. And from an infrastructure point of view, there are synergies, but there are also no synergies, right? Because the machines you cannot use for AI. Mm-hmm. The machines mm-hmm. for Bitcoin mining are very special purpose machines, right? However, and this is why mining companies become actually energy companies, because mm-hmm. what they do in the case of AI and in the case of Bitcoin and in the case of everything else, they utilize energy and bottle it into a digital good. And the digital good is either Bitcoin or it's like AI mining capacity. Mm-hmm. AI processing capacity.
Mm-hmm. So, and do you see there are synergies with what Definity is doing or ICP?
Well, I mean, we're not in the mining.
As an infrastructure provider more.
Not. I mean, there is a big AI play mm-hmm. that I'm happy to share, right? Yeah. But I think on the infrastructure side, we're not really involved in mining, even though our subnet, like our nodes are very specific, right? Mm. So if you want to become a node provider in the Definity ecosystem, in the ICP ecosystem, you need to follow a certain spec of hardware, which is CPU based today, because that's where the industry is coming from. But our engineers are working on dedicated GPU subnets as well mm-hmm. to process AI on chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This region is definitely, we're in the right place to be, because all of these chats cannot happen anywhere else. I mean, we're talking about mining, we're shifting towards AI, and we want to hear a little bit more about AI and what your company is doing for sure. And again, also this kind of trends from AI to AI coins. And are the AI coins doing anything, or is just a packaging? Yeah. So maybe we can open it up to talk to us a little bit about what your company is doing and how are you using AI with your current model?
Yeah, sure. So let me start with some kind of basic comparison between blockchains in general and the internet computer. Right?
Please.
So the internet computer is, in the truest sense of the word, a world computer, which means it has been designed, and we spend 1,000 man-day years of R&D into that development. Yeah. Has been designed as a distributed computer. What does that mean? So if you have a blockchain today, whether it's Ethereum or Solana or any, actually pick any of the, I don't know how many do we have now, 20,000 projects, whatever. Pick any of them. If they say it's built on chain, the app is built on chain. It's not built on chain. Right? So what is built on chain in the case of a normal blockchain is the token ledger, right? Yeah. The token transactions, the token database. But a proper Web3 application obviously needs to have much more than just a token ledger. It needs to have a front end. It needs to have a complex back end. It needs to have data storage. And everything needs to be decentralized. So the internet computer has been set up in a way that is a full stack decentralized computer. So you can store front end, back end, complex back end logic, token ledger anyways, and data on chain. Yeah, so that's kind of the main differentiation in the design. The second main differentiation is our engineers decided very early on to abandon the gas fee model. So we have a reverse gas fee model, which means it's more like Web2, where you as a user, you would not pay for gas, which means you don't need to keep change in your pocket all the time and put in change for transactions. Right? But if I'm building an application, then I have to pay for compute cycles, like I would pay Amazon Web Services today. Right, and then it's on me to monetize my application and make that return. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so these are kind of two super important differentiations. This infrastructure setup, the ability to run everything, the entire application in a smart contract, allows us to run large language models on the blockchain. Right? Now, why would you want to be interested in that? Because I think there is a future where centralized AI models might become a problem, right? Not for everything, for sure, but there will be use cases where you rather want to have control of your own AI model. Mm-hmm. And if you run this on a smart contract, then inputs and outputs are verifiable because everything is transparent. So you know what's going in, you know what's coming out, and you can actually tell that what has come out is actually from your model. Super important if you think about a future where corporates and governments have special purpose AI models for certain tasks, right? And
like black boxes.
Yeah, now it's a black box, right? Now it's not only a black box, not even your black box, right? Yeah. It's someone else's black box, right? So smart contracts allow you to own your AI models, to actually allow DAOs to own the AI model, because everything that is deployed on the internet computer can be turned into a DAO. It allows the AI models to have a wallet address. Because also, my hypothesis is we're going to see a future where AI models are becoming economic participants. And we've seen that to a certain extent already now. I'm not sure if you guys saw that example of A16Z with the meme coin, right? And you have, and the most important trade is smart contracts, like Vitalik used to say, are unstoppable, right? So,
but they say the same thing about AI as well. They say the same thing about many, many things.
No, but AI today is, I mean, centralized servers are stoppable. They're easily stoppable, right? It's a single attack vector and then the thing is out. And obviously in the time we're in now, one of the most common targets for warfare are data centers, right?
Yes.
So if something runs on a decentral computer, then yeah, you can take out one data center with one node, but it's replicated, it will still run, right? And it's tamper-proof. So that's one big AI play that we're going after. The second thing is something I'm super excited about, which Dorma, our founder, already teased a bit. Next to that ability that we can run AI unstoppable and tamper-proof in a smart contract, we also have a programming language on the internet computer, which is called Motoko. It's our own proprietary language, which is very AI friendly because data sticks to the code. And it has something called orthogonal persistence. And I don't want to get too technical, right? But think about it in the following way. If you want to update your application, then what you need to do is you need to update the database. You need to update all of these different layers. With that setup that we have, AI is able to update applications through prompting because it doesn't need to worry about all of these complex interfaces. Everything is in one smart contract and data basically sticks to the code. So the state of data is immediately updated. And that makes the internet computer a very interesting and maybe the only breeding ground in the world where AI can build and ship. So think about a world where you just prompt something in, like in a ChatGPT kind of format. It doesn't only give you the code, because that's also what Claude 3.5 can do today, but it gives you a URL with your app, right? And if you want to adjust
I was trying to do this with ChatGPT. I was trying to write a program, then give the URL, and then try to run it. But it's not as easy as I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Why? Because you have two things. You have different languages, right, that needs to be used, and you have all of these different interfaces when you actually want to launch a web application. It's not like you just upload it in one place and then that's it, right?
And the other problem I found is if I give the command to ChatGPT written in a different format, it gives me two different outcomes. And the command is the same.
Yeah.
So it takes like, let's say, 10 or 15 iterations in order to do what you're supposed to do. It's not like so straightforward.
Exactly.
And some people get demotivated because if you do not get it right from the first or the second time, you say, oh my God, I cannot program with ChatGPT. It's not for me.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So, and we see like there's a future coming where if you can think, you can create an app, right? Because the only thing you need to do is put in your prompt. I want to have a blog. I want to have whatever. I want to have a website maker even. And the application will be deployed. You got to send a URL. You can update it with prompts. And that is a huge disruption for two things. For some of the software companies, it will be a huge disruption. And if we, you know, project AI becoming more smarter and smarter, and this model being trained more and more with logic of a CRM system or whatnot, then who needs to pay for $1 million of software contracts anymore, right? I'll just prompt it and I use prompts to update it. We're not there yet in that complexity, but clearly the direction is going there. So that's the first thing. Software companies will be, I think, disrupted. The second thing is everyone will become their own app store, right? You don't need to go through that tedious process. You don't need to leave a cut for Apple anymore, right? And they take a huge cut off your apps, yeah, right? So if the three of us will go to dinner and, you know, we want to have a quick build splitter, I'll just type in, give me a build splitter for three people, give me a slider, and then there we go.
Right? We usually have downloaded this app now where you put your finger, we all put our finger, and then randomly decides who's going to pay.
There's also something you can do, yeah.
Yes, but then in the prompt you have to say, also put a random number generator, but then wink twice.
Yeah exactly.
Just to tell is like when you talked about persistence, I had a flashback towards my high frequency trading days, mm-hmm, because there in the infrastructure, as you run it, it's very important what are the inputs at specific moments, mm-hmm, because when you take down the algorithms and you bring them back together, you need to have the right inputs such that everything boots back together. Exactly. And when you said it, I was like thinking, wow, actually, and because it's just actually, and I remember it was such a big deal actually in high frequency trading operations to have that, because otherwise you have to take down the portfolio, you have to close it. You cannot do that actually.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So it's really amazing use case.
Yeah. So, and that could be a very cool future for AI, right?
Can I ask you like to also to give us, I mean, I know you for longer than you have joined Definity. How did, if you are comfortable sharing, how did that synergy, beautiful magic happen and that you're now chief business officer at Definity?
Yeah. Well, like with so many stories in consulting, right? Definity was my client. So I was doing two projects for them. So I had, you know, ample time to get familiar with the tech. I had ample time to get familiar with the people, and most importantly, right? Because you want to work with the right people. And then we just, you know, it just happened one day. We explored, like, it might be a good option for me to join. I think I'll bring in a lot of, you know, skills that can be quite useful for the next phase of the growth. I had my last day at Roland Berger on a Friday, and on Monday I showed up in Zurich and started a new job at Definity.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thanks.
It doesn't sound like you're the guy that takes long vacations.
Honestly, I would have loved to take a vacation, but I mean, sometimes you just need to go with the flow, right? Yes. So there is time for vacation, but there's also time to grind, right?
Can I just ask you, I mean, your name, the first time actually that I have heard of you, we didn't spoke about it. It sounded very non-German.
Yeah.
But you, how does that, maybe just is my curiosity, but you know, if you...
No, I mean, that is actually a funny thing because everyone, obviously, because of the first name and then the way the last name is written, expects I'm French. Mm-hmm. So whenever I had French colleagues at RB, they were like immediately talking French to me, right? Yeah. And they were super offended whenever I told them like, I can't speak French, right? Because they think I can speak French. I don't just don't want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So, born in Germany, but there is French origin on my mother's side, and on my father's side. So Samat is actually a Greek name. But at one point in time, at the registration of the authorities, they slipped an E into the name because if it just would have been Samat is with an I instead of the IE, it would be a dead giveaway that this is Greek, right? Okay. So French, German, Greek.
Yeah. I like the Greek part.
because of your...
because I am Greek.
But it would have been a dead giveaway, right? Yes. If it was Samatis with an I, right?
For sure.
See,
for sure.
What does the future look like for your company now? What is the next, let's call it Vision 2030, because we're getting closer actually to 2030.
Yeah.
And we are now reaching 2025. So 5 years down the line, what are you guys trying to achieve, especially in the UAE?
Yeah. So maybe first of all, kind of the global side of things, right? So Definity is the major contributor to the Internet Computer Protocol. We are foundation. So our job is to provide the technology and provide the templates and foster the community, basically built on the Internet Computer. Our vision is that at one point in time, most of the applications will be running on a decentralized infrastructure, on the Internet Computer infrastructure. And the second part of the vision is the one thing I mentioned about AI. We believe AI is going to disrupt the software industry in a significant way, that the Internet Computer will be a preferred platform to ship apps for people.
Have you seen what Elon Musk said, like in the next 3 years? a computer will have the knowledge of a human, and 3 years or 2 years after that, then a computer will have the combined knowledge of all the humans in the world. Do you believe this?
Well, I think I believe this to a certain extent, but I probably disagree on the timeline, right? Because I think there's always one flaw we used to make, right? No matter what tech we're talking about, we tend to overestimate the adoption. Mm. Like, we think adoption would be quicker. Like, I mean, just look back. Like, when we all started in digital asset, we thought,
we can see the same in autonomous vehicles. And
exactly.
We can see the same thing with Tesla and
with
also
crypto, yeah.
And also the
many
same
examples,
thing with SpaceX.
Right?
Yeah.
It takes many a little examples. Bit longer.
Exactly. So you see the potential, and then you're relatively quick to judge, oh, this is going to change the world tomorrow. Mm. Most of the time, the answer is no, it doesn't, right? But the second thing we tend to make as a mistake is we tend to underestimate the impact that it then really has over a long period of time, right? So what I'm saying with that is, I think this probably is going to happen, and it's going to have a huge impact, but it's probably going to take a few iterations again down the line. Mm-hmm.
Right? Can I ask you then, in that context, maybe a provocative question, how much are you using crypto and crypto applications in your daily life compared to how much you're using generative AI in your daily life? Maybe see where you have reality today, actually.
Yeah, I think, I mean, but that's also reality check for the industry today, right? And I think this is also, by the way, I think this is a problem for the industry. That's why I think we have a lot of capital misallocation today in the industry. Because if you look at real apps that came out of blockchain, it's not a lot. It's
close to zero.
Yeah, it's close to zero, right? I mean, what I'm using on a daily basis is OpenChat. OpenChat is a fully decentralized version of WhatsApp and Telegram on the internet computer, where I can even send value, right? I can even, like, in WeChat, I can send you Bitcoin or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm using, obviously, DEXs for trading and so on. I'm using our new wallet, Oizy, for storing my value, because it has network custody. It's also a brand new concept, basically. But obviously, I use a ton of generative AI. Right? Mm-hmm. But I use it as a co-pilot. Right? So I trained my own AI model already when I was at RB. And it's better than analysts. Right? Yeah. Sure. I mean, that's the truth, right? Because once you know how you want something structured, and once you're able to review what's coming out, then it's a really powerful tool. Mm.
The problem with ChatGPT is that you cannot just give it like multiple URLs and say, go in this website, read the content, and then compare it to this research, for example, and make me a table. It still doesn't do that.
Well, there are plugins, right, that would allow you to do that. So the model I train is a custom GPT model that has some plugins which allows you to basically have different, exactly, to Google and to have different sources, and actually can break free out of his own kind of mind, so to say. But also Google released something, I forgot the name, but it's actually, I forgot the name, but Google released an AI model that allows you to do like more scientific paper comparison.
I remember, yes.
I forgot the name, but, but it's already happening, right? Yeah. So I think the key though is, and I mean, you guys are also on LinkedIn, right? I mean, the key is really to ensure that whatever content is produced doesn't look like it's AI generated content. Right? I see so many social media posts where I can immediately tell just by the amount of emojis that someone put into the post that this is just a GPT post, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's not good, right? Those also in fact you recognize it, but also it's not top quality, I would say.
Yeah, actually,
right? 100%. This is my impression, right?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, there is no real thinking in it, right? And then second, it's we have this problem with the GPT content, I guess, that it tends to hyperbole things, right? You have these words that none of us would use, right? Usually in a post, and everything is groundbreaking and everything is revolutionary, right? Mm. So I think that would still be a long way until that produces proper content. Yeah.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about these crypto AI tokens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
I would love to. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so first of all, I believe in that vision. That's also what we're following, right? Mm. That you need to have a counterbalance to AI that's going to be centralized.
Are you guys planning to launch a coin?
I can't say anything
about this. Oh, you asked the right question.
Asking the right question. It's very strong.
No. Sorry. No, it's fine. I mean, we have the ICP token, obviously, yes, right? Yes. So, but by the way, our ecosystem is launching coins all the time, right? Yeah, I mean, yes. We have tons of ecosystem projects, especially in AI, right? I mean, we're probably one of the fastest growing AI ecosystems at the moment. Like, we have 60 plus projects building AI applications on the internet computer. And they all launch their own token at one point in time, right? But yeah, to your question, like, I strongly believe in the synergy that kind of a blockchain infrastructure brings to a centralized AI model, right? Because AI by nature is a very centralizing tech. Blockchain by nature should be a very decentralizing tech. And so blockchain to a certain extent is kind of the truth machine for AI in my view, right? So it keeps it in check. It keeps it in line with ambitions of humanity and so on. Now, this is obviously a narrative that many people picked up, right? And there are also many great people in the space, like, you know, Trent and Bruce from Ocean Protocol, when they founded their vision in 2016, yeah. Like, there was groundbreaking. They were just maybe a bit too early, right, for the market, because that we still didn't have GPT at that point in time. But I think probably a lot of the AI projects, right, and I don't name anyone, right, but a lot of the AI projects, I don't see really the purpose of having a blockchain layer, because you are just an orchestration layer for a centralized service. And that, in my view, defeats a bit the purpose of decentralizing AI, right? I mean, yes, you can access gate a bit. You can see that you put a token layer on top of a central AI model, maybe. But I think the real value of decentralization lies in decentralized compute. Mm. Yeah. What do you guys think of the AI tokens?
I think it's definitely hype, similar to meme coins. But I think it's here to stay, because they will use this kind of tokens to get funding. And nowadays it's not easy to get funding.
True, but it also tells you something about the state of the market to a certain extent, right? Yeah, people pushing out a narrative to take money off the market, and usually if they take money off the market, they take money from retail.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Which I don't think is a good way to do. And at one point in time, projects that don't have tech will collapse.
Yeah, they will fail.
Right?
But many of these projects are failing, especially if you have a market collapse like 2015.
Yeah,
like crypto that removed like 90% of all the projects.
Yeah, well, I think that, right, there are always like, I think two things to the equation, right? There's one is your funding. Do you have enough funding to survive such a market? But the second is also, and I believe we're coming closer to that second point, where it's not only about funding, it's actually about, do I actually have something to show, right?
Yes.
And we saw that in the first wave and the second wave, that where many projects had absolutely literally nothing to show, right? And hence they also vanished. Because their faucets were closed, because VCs saw that, okay, these guys don't have anything. They sold us a nice vision, but it's literally nothing, right? And this is something that we do fundamentally different, also because we had this very strong R&D approach. We do have the largest R&D team in the entire Web3 space, right? Mm. Sitting in downtown Zurich.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we can talk a little bit about Web3.
Yeah.
What is their day-to-day activities? What are you guys building? Are you building something new on Web3, or is it just an add-on?
No. So what I mentioned in the beginning, right, we built an entire new infrastructure, like a true world computer infrastructure. Mm-hmm. That is...
From scratch.
From scratch. Mm-hmm. From scratch. That's also why we have the largest R&D operations in Web3, mm-hmm. because you really require...
Yeah.
PhDs, cryptographers, solid people to actually build something like this, right? And we believe strongly that this infrastructure is the true Web3 infrastructure, ultimately, right? And
what do you mean by true Web3?
True Web3 in the sense that you can really have a decentralized application on the entire IT stack, front end, back end, data, everything is stored decentralized. While what I mentioned, like with the current blockchains, nothing is stored, right? They just have the token ledger and everything else is still Web2.
I was going to ask you about the OKX. Nowadays, they're saying they're fully Web3. I'm not sure if this is the...
Well, I think there are different ways on how you define Web3, right? I would define Web3 as truly decentralized and with true user ownership. I don't think that if you just have a token ledger and the rest is centralized, I don't think you actually decentralized, right?
That's why I wanted to ask you, because you're the the expert in this field.
So so we continue to building this infrastructure. Obviously, there is still a lot of work on the core infrastructure. But now, by the way, now the infrastructure has reached a maturity where people start building really cool things on it. Mm-hmm. And so next to that infrastructure part, we're focusing on five things. The first one is AI, what I mentioned already, right? And the, in particular, that paradigm of AI building applications for you on the internet computer and AI on chain. The second is what we summarize as creator economy. So, you know, the early idea of Web3 was really that, hey, we have a problem with Uber, we have a problem with YouTube and with Twitter back then before Elon bought it, right? Mm-hmm. That everything is just centralized, it can be censored. And at one point in time, Web2 models tend to rip off the creators, right? Because at one point in time, you kind of need to maximize your gains. And the only way to maximize your gains is take away from the creators, basically, right?
Yeah.
And to fulfill this vision of a decentralized kind of web world, like content creation, you need to have a full decentralized infrastructure, right? You need to store everything decentralized. So hence, this is like a huge focus for us. And this is where you have the companies like OpenChat that are building a decentral Telegram and WhatsApp. We have a company currently building a decentralized version of OnlyFans in Hong Kong.
There was a company who was building also decentralized Netflix in the past.
Yeah.
I haven't I haven't heard about them for like 5 years now. And they raised a lot of money as well.
Yeah. And there were ex-YouTube CEOs involved in that and so on. I remember that company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't know the specific why they, maybe they even exist. I don't know, but I haven't seen them for a long time.
Yes.
But I think the problem is twofold, right? Number one, you really need a decentralized computer infrastructure and blockchains don't have that. So you either build this on the internet computer or you go on decentralized.
But can you go to Microsoft or Amazon? And
you can, but then it's not decentralized. Then it's decentralized. Then it's just a Web2 player, right?
And that's what everybody else is kind of actually
doing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's nothing wrong about it, but...
And everybody who is getting AWS or Azure, they think that they are doing full decentralized. They have full decentralized.
It's obviously not, right? It's nonsense. And the other problem with that part as well is like streaming is very intense, right? If you want to do it, there are certain things that today make way more sense centralized versus decentralized, clearly, right?
Yeah.
If I just want to stream large amounts of content and that where there's no issues about privacy or whatnot, like a Netflix service, do it on Amazon Web Service by all means, right? Mm. Put a token layer on top if you want to play around a bit. But the tech we're building is really meant to be freedom tech, right? If you really want to build applications that are decentralized, censorship resistant, that are fair, cannot be taken down, then you build on the internet computer.
And you operate as a SaaS model?
That is up to you. We're providing the tools, right? We're providing the playground. You can then basically decide on how you want to monetize it. But SaaS is an obvious kind of way, or like a subscription model, right?
Yes.
Or, I mean, this is where crypto comes in. Mm-hmm. We also seen staking models, right?
Yeah.
Where people just say, okay, buy our token and stake it. And then when we give you the service for free, as long as you have that amount staked.
Mm-hmm.
So creator economy is a big part, which includes social media, which includes games, which includes content creation. The third part is obviously DeFi, because DeFi is the only product market fit that the crypto part of the industry so far has, right? And on DeFi, there's something very interesting, which is the ability of the internet computer to interact with other chains seamlessly and natively. So there's a protocol level integration with Bitcoin and with Ethereum, soon with Solana, and others are following, which allows the internet computer to read and write smart contracts on Ethereum and to read and write on the Bitcoin blockchain and so on. What that means is you can natively interact, right? This is also why we have currently 30 plus projects in the Bitcoin space, not in the ICP space, in the Bitcoin space using ICP technology to build layer twos on Bitcoin.
It's a big thing nowadays.
Very strong.
Yeah. I mean, Bitcoin DeFi is a dream we've been waiting for since 2016, right?
Yes.
So DeFi is another one. And then obviously we have this entire cybersecurity, government and enterprise focus as well, which is called Utopia. And it's a project called Utopia, right? Which is the idea that as a government or an enterprise, you want to have sovereignty over your data and over your cloud. So we package the internet computer technology into a private solution that governments and enterprises can use. And they will be able to have tamper-proof applications in a cloud that the NSA can't access.
But not only that, we've seen a lot of hacking nowadays, and we've seen a lot of exchanges and also big institutional B2B brokers getting hacked and somehow losing all of these crypto assets.
Data as well, I would say.
Data.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is exactly the case why you want a decentralized infrastructure like the internet computer, because you reduce the attack vector by probably 99%, right? So that's what we're looking for. And then the last part is that chain fusion part that I mentioned, where we have this protocol level integration, which allows other protocols, like if you build on Ethereum, you build on Solana, and you're happy there, which by all means, be happy there. It's not about competition. It's more of a complementary thing. We offer people that build on other ecosystems to use these parts of the internet computer to fully decentralize their stack. So for instance, if you're Uniswap, your front interface, your front end probably sits on Amazon Web Services. If you would just want to have it run it decentralized, be our guest. You can just use an ICP tag. It's even white labeled. You don't need to tell anyone, right? But we're kind of providing the decentralization infrastructure for other projects as well to come along. And this is where the Bitcoin ecosystem is really excited about at the moment.
So nowadays you can build a decentralized project and you can get AI to update the decentralized project by itself. So
very soon, yeah.
Very soon. So you will not need human capital. So your OPEX will be extremely low.
100%. I mean, imagine the amount of efficiency once this enters the corporate world. And we all know this takes a long time until there's corporate adoption, right? But once this enters the corporate world, I mean, this probably eliminates 70%+ of cost that you have today in IT, right? Because IT departments in corporates, and I can tell you from my consulting experience, right? The majority of tasks they do is they manage complexity.
Yes.
They don't even do something that's really valuable in terms of, hey, let's think about the next big thing that we can do for our corporate IT. No, they're busy fixing things, right? There's a hole there, they plug it. At the same time, there comes a hole on the other side, and then...
And much of the day is patching. It's not actually
Exactly. They're patching like that. Exactly. So so I believe we're gonna move into a future where there is an alternative to this one.
I would actually want to add, open up another, maybe also like a bit of a very interesting, but I think also maybe a provocative topic. But it was highly interesting for me from an exchange listing market making perspective when Dom one time actually shared the story of the ICP token launch, you know, which I think the reason why I'm mentioning is because, you know, I really value that we have you here as a guest all the information and useful projects that you're providing to us. But also now I'm reflecting on the people going on CoinMarketCaps, clicking the ICP and the all button to show the
and
whole
time. And you see this horrible chart.
So I know this. I don't know if you're comfortable sharing the story, but I found it the most fascinating story related to some also other exchanges and other individuals who are now in jail, actually, SBF, right? If you wanted to share that experience, because I just found it very emotional, but fascinating to hear when a first time Dom shared it in a specific context, actually. So
No, 100%. I mean, I wasn't there at launch, right? So I can only like give you my view on what my assessment of the situation is and what you can in the meantime see. And by the way, for the viewers, there is a really interesting website called cryptoleaks.info.
Yeah.
Maybe you guys can put it in the description later on or so, which gives you a full kind of investigative report about everything that happens. So if you really want to dive into the details, including video evidence and everything, then this is going to be popcorn for a night for you, right? Yeah. So,
I thought CoffeeZilla was the number one in this.
No, but this one is actually. I know. Maybe first to provide the context for the viewers, and then explain like kind of what happened from your perspective.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, if you look at the all time chart, right, you see this very nasty spike, and then you see it dropping down, right? And it obviously looks horrible. Like for people that don't know about the internet computer and are just, you know, triggered by charts, they look at it and then they say, okay, next one, right? So what happened is that relatively quickly after launch, like the token price ran through the roof and then relatively quickly crashed, right? From that high top. Now, again, I wasn't part of the launch, so I really can't tell you anything on firsthand experience. Yeah. But having went through all of the CryptoLeaks.info, there were some very suspicious things going on, right? There was a perp ICP popping up on FTX a few weeks before the launch of the token, which, I mean, we're all long enough in crypto. Back then, perps were really not a thing, right, mm-hmm. in crypto. Mm-hmm. I mean, perps probably came around 2018-19 to be popular, right? Mm-hmm. So you had a perp on FTX, which set very, very high price expectations. Definity had nothing to do with it, right? So someone was setting a price expectation for the perp. And then obviously, as you know, once there is the spot market opens, spot and perp try to kind of go the same direction, right? Yeah. So so there was a huge kind of rise in the spot markets. And then there were apparently also some not so clever vestings made and some people kind of then took advantage of this. And again, I can't tell you everything. I can't really tell you from firsthand experience. I would encourage you guys to go to CryptoLeaks.info. But there's some evidence that some major players that you just mentioned have been involved, and maybe not personally, but at least, you know, in the greater periphery, there were smear campaigns about it. So it really, if you just look at CryptoLeaks.info, it sounded like a very obvious.
And was it only FTX that was listing the perp, or it was listed all around?
I think it was only FTX.
It was only FTX, actually, with a specific market maker setting the pricing very high there, actually.
Yeah. So this is a story for itself. I think given that all of the things we have seen now, right, and we've seen the FTX collapse, we have seen Celsius collapsing, right? And we've seen so many, BitConnect, let alone BitConnect, right? We've seen so many scandals that I think it's even beyond imagination what some people would actually do to kind of rip off.
Retail. I think FTX will be one of the highest selling movies of all time when it will come out.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I hope it's accurate.
Maybe a Netflix documentary, or it will be one of these Wall Street 1 or Wall Street 2 movies.
Yeah, but now, obviously, that Trump is in charge, maybe even there's something coming out, right? Because also there was a bit of cover-up, apparently, for FTX on some Democratic bodies.
Yes.
So, again, I encourage everyone to read it. It's a sad story, but a fascinating story, and it gives you a deep dive into how a few of these market makers operate and so on.
And in that context, Pierre, we really want to say is that, you know, first to congratulate Definity actually to going through, you know, a very successful development. But surviving as well, because we, both Demetrios and myself, we come from a trading, market making, liquidity provision background, and we know how impactful pricing can be, actually. So I think it's really, you know, not giving here financial advice for everyone who is viewing, but, you know, really wanted to say, you know, that... it's, I think, an interesting story for many to be read. A challenging, but the one that you have, I think, as a project and as a team handled really, really well.
Thanks. I mean, the kudos obviously go to the team, right? Yeah. To Dom and Jan and everyone that kept on building and just, you know, try to minimize distraction from it and just kept on building. And I think, again, like this is the substance topic, and this is also why I chose to go to Definity. They've built a lot of substance and no one can take away that substance.
It's like the show must go on.
Yeah. And you know, like what's that famous quote from, was it Warren Buffett? Like when the tide comes or when the tide goes away, you see you went swimming naked.
Yeah.
Right? Tide can come. Yeah. We have clothes on, right? So
I think maybe to close this session, can you tell us a little bit what is your plans for the next couple of weeks? Mm-hmm. Which conferences you're planning to attend? Because before we started this podcast, we heard some nice interviews you are going to be part of, or share anything, as you can share with us anything that you can.
Yeah, sure. So obviously the ICP ecosystem, by the way, is 24/7 busy. So there's always something happening around the world with, nice. With ICP hubs. Mm-hmm. So we have this structure, by the way, called ICP hubs, where depending on where you are and you're interested in ICP.
What is the website for that?
It's ICP hubs. So we can put mm-hmm. the link later on in the description. So by the way, so if you're interested in exploring ICP, there is always a local hub that you can log onto. They will help you with explanations, with potential hackathons, with potential funding, and so on and so forth. And these hubs, it's 33 now in the world. They obviously organize events around the clock. So there's always something happening in the ICP universe. Most of my colleagues are now in Bangkok for DEF CON. Yes. But I'm heading out to Lisbon tomorrow. There is the one of the largest European crypto AI conference tomorrow. The day after tomorrow. I'm going to give a keynote in a fireside chat. And then we have Web Summit starting next week, right? Which is the big tech event. Mm-hmm. Right? And we're almost going to be on stage there.
And where is that?
In Lisbon.
Same as well in Lisbon.
Yeah, exactly. So Lisbon now for the next week becomes really like the center of tech in general, not only Web3, but tech in general.
So thank you. Yeah, really, it was awesome. And I hope people can catch you in between Dubai, Zurich, Lisbon, and all these places. Really. You know, as a friend, as a colleague as well, thank you very much for taking the time. It was really fascinating. And, you know, have a blast and wishing you a safe flight. And hopefully our audience has enjoyed the. So this is a little bit big thank you from my side. Yeah.
Thanks, guys, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us.